Well, good morning and Merry Christmas again. We have four Gospels, each tell the story of Jesus in their own way. Matthew is very interested in kind of integrating the Hebrew prophetic tradition. So he likes to quote from the prophets, sometimes in unique and surprising ways. And he's also very interested in kind of the events after Jesus' birth, particularly under sort of the tyrannical reign of Herod the Great, who was not great in so many ways. Mark just skips it. He just jumps right into John the Baptist preparing the way for reasons that are complicated, but ultimately we just don't know. Luke is a lot more detailed. He talks a lot more about the events leading up to Jesus' birth, and he couches it in terms of these angelic visitations and the birth of John the Baptist, and that's where you've got the shepherds and the angels and all of that. And then there's John. He's sitting down to write his narrative of the birth of Jesus, and he says, let's start with a song or a poem or something like that. And it just feels very out of left field. And instead of these are the events that led up to Jesus' birth, he starts with in the beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And if you're Jewish in some way or connected to the Hebrew Bible, you'll immediately recognize certain parallels. That's how the Bible begins in the first narrative of creation. And as it turns out, the connections between the stories of creation and kind of the meaning of Jesus being on earth are practically infinite. We could spend a very long time talking about this. And if you've ever come to my Bible study which on Sundays between the services, we did that once. We spent 7-ish, 8 months, I don't remember how long, looking at Genesis and then leading up to and then spending a ridiculous amount of time in the book of Leviticus, of all things. Because that's where it really hits home. We're not going to do that today. It's Christmas. We have places to go. But there are a couple of things that I want to point out that I think speak to this moment of God becoming flesh. The first is that God has this weird tendency not to do things alone. God pretty rarely, in fact, very rarely, just says, fine, I'll do it, breaks through reality and creation and whatever it is that he has set into motion and just, boom, acts. When he does, we call that miraculous. And if you have just loads of time on your hand, go through the Bible and mark out how often that happens. It's exceedingly rare. Instead, God basically always acts through people, which is why it shouldn't surprise us that after this big explosive beginning of in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and then everything that was created through this Word. So in a weird, very abstract way, Jesus is the Word spoken to create the universe, or his embodiment, or something. I don't want to speculate too hard. And after this explosive ending, he goes, there was this guy named John. He wasn't that, but he was the witness that got people prepared, which seems kind of weird. I mean, if you're the Son of God in flesh, do you need somebody to go and prepare everything for you? Apparently you do, or at least that's how God chose. And so there's this weird, sense that when we talk about the identity of God, capital G, like God in the biggest sense of the word, God is in within God's self, community. That's what we call the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And you can see maybe echoes of that because God just doesn't feel the need to act alone. He wants to involve as many people as he can and invite as many people as he can with him. And Jesus is going to do that a lot. So God acts through people. He also acts in history. And aside from the comments about, hey, there was this guy named John who definitely focuses in on a singular moment in history, he actually connects all of this that is happening to the history of God's people as it is playing out even now. And he does this at the very end of our reading. And it's easy to miss. He says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld its glory, the glory as of the only Son of the Father. These words seem, they're words that seem to make sense when you read them. And then when you really start digging in, you realize that there's either a rabbit hole or a well that is exceedingly deep or waters that go far deeper than the Mariana Trench. Basically, pick your analogy. Because this is all connected to the story of how God is present among his people. Words like glory, the kavod, if you are operating in the Hebrew world, is a way of talking about God's presence and his tangible, manifest presence. The presence that would like fill the temple or the sacred space cultivated by his people Israel, that would cause the priests themselves to back off. Or if you want to go like more pop culture, I sometimes like to say it's like the face-melting presence of God, and by that I mean like Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And if you've seen that movie, it was terrifying as a kid. Now it just looks like clay figures. But that's exaggerated a little, just a little. the glory of God, this radiant perfection, is wild, it's dangerous, and it is like pure life. And so nothing reeking of death can come anywhere near it, which means humans need to be careful. So we behold his glory, John says. But also this word, which, spoiler alert, is Jesus, becomes flesh and dwells. That language is the same way you would talk about this manifest, heavy, tangible, dangerous presence of God being present within sacred space. It's basically the same language, same words. Which means that whatever's happening in this Christmas moment, as Jesus is born, God's presence is now made manifest within a human being, and it turns out it's his son, is deeply connected. In fact, so connected you can't separate it with the story of God's ongoing presence on earth. We have learned to take this for granted. If you were to go out on the streets, or maybe if I pull you here, and I were to say, if you believe that God, capital G, God exists, where is God? And most everybody, if they say, yes, I believe in a God, or however you define it, will say, well, he's in my heart, or he's everywhere, or, you know, some, you know, he's omnipresent, if you want to be really fancy, he's everywhere. Fine. I'm not denying that. But the only reason why we now say that is because first, the Word became flesh and dwelt among His people in a way that He never had before. And that has so influenced the way we think about divine presence that most of us probably don't know that that is, in fact, an innovation. And the only reason why we would say that God is now everywhere is because there was a very weird, unique group of people. They were a sect within Judaism in the first century who started saying some weird things, that they had believed that the great king from the line of David had come, the Messiah. Not only that, he was the actual Son of God, divinity in flesh. He walked around, he walked among us, he taught, he broke bread with us, and eventually allowed his body to be broken for us. And in doing so, he broke brokenness. He broke the curse that had been laid on all of us, which is the curse that makes God's presence, that manifest, tangible, dangerous, face-melting presence of God, suddenly safe and accessible because we're no longer stained by the stench of death, but can actually walk freely and openly into His presence. That presence of God is no longer something to be afraid of or something to be very careful about, because the Word became flesh and dwelt in our midst. Just like God's presence became tangible and manifest and had dwelt in the temple of long ago. Christmas, as we celebrate it, is wild and dangerous because God, in His unpredictableness, sent His Son. The very Word, His essence that created the universe, now wrapped, swaddled up, laying in some hay, and waiting for His time to grow up, to teach, and to bring the very presence of God everywhere He goes. And then to pass that presence on to His disciples long after He had defeated death itself, and say to them, "Your turn." And so we celebrate today as we have for the last 2,000-ish years, because each generation of our people, followers of Jesus, have said to the next, "The Holy Spirit is with you, the divine presence is on you, it's your turn to do what we did." That's Christmas. Merry Christmas.